Now, when it comes to the current events, much of what we have pointed out here, we kind of talked about already last time when it comes to the coronation of King Charles. What we did this time is we gave you a lot of additional material. We pointed out there are two Q&As on the Stone of Destiny, and we give you the links on those. And then when it comes to the veneration of the cross, because that was also part of the coronation exercise over there, we are referring to a Q&A on the use of crosses and two more Q&As on the origin of the sign of the cross. So you might want to look at that as well. And this is pretty much our summary when it comes to what we should take from this coronation. We say what is important for us to recognize is that another Jewish descendant of David sits on the throne of David, according to God's unconditional promise to David that he would never lack a descendant to sit on his throne. This recognition has no bearing on the king's righteousness and the righteousness of the clergy, the politicians, and the people. In fact, God is very angry with the sins of the UK, including the sin of false worship and idolatry, and punishment is looming. Now, of course, we know it's not just limited towards the UK. I mean, God is very angry with the sins of the people of the United States of America, and I might add Europe, and I might add all the other nations. And we read in the Bible that God's wrath is upon those who are unwilling to turn to him, something we'll be talking about a little bit later today. Then we have several articles on Mr. Joe Biden and his son Hunter. And this is, of course, a developing issue which is not going to be over soon, I don't believe at least. We talked about Mr. Trump and what is happening to him. And then we had several articles on Robert Kennedy Jr., all because they have some different viewpoints on certain issues. We also talk about what Tucker Carlson is up to or trying to. And then we talk about the EU bans Ukrainian grain, but that's all part of the Standing Watch program, which you should be listening to and viewing. But I'd like to point out an article which we have pretty much at the end of the current events. Once you start burning or prohibiting books. And this article, which was by Deutsche Welle from May 9, talks about events in Germany on May 10, 1933. And that is when the book burning began. And it says here, by May of 1933, more than 200 writers had been blacklisted. A year later, more than 3,500 written works had been banned. It started, as I said, May 10, 1933, when they started burning books by some very prominent and famous German writers, and we list some of them here in the article. Now then we are quoting German Jewish poet Heinrich Heine. You might or might not know him, but in Germany he's one of the most popular, most famous poets who has ever lived. And in 1820 he said this: "Where books are burned, eventually people will also be burned." Now he said that about Spain, medieval Spain, but of course it absolutely applied to Nazi Germany, because this is exactly what happened. Now, our comment at the end of the article goes like this: today, every time we hear about prohibiting or censoring books or free speech, we should take note and wake up. Because it starts somewhere, and then people are being persecuted, they're being prosecuted, who are saying things others don't want them to say. I have to be careful right now, because YouTube is not in favor of some of the things which I would love to say right now, and which I can, because if I do, I get another strike. It's called censorship. It's called something which is completely ungodly. And we should all be very well aware of that. Now, I'd like to go on with some other things. An article was published by Der Spiegel Online on May 12th in German, so I had to get that translated by Google Translator this morning. And here's the English version. Viktor Orban, Prime Minister of Hungary, compared the EU's European unification project with Adolf Hitler's plan for rule. Since the end of the Roman Empire, there have been efforts to restore the empire to its territory, said the right-wing populist in the western Hungarian city of Veszprém, I guess. And then he goes on to say, Byzantium, Charlemagne, Otto, Napoleon, and Hitler, they all dreamed of European unity on different bases. Did you get those names he is quoting? It's almost like he's quoting from our literature. The only one he missed was Charles V, Karl der Fünfte. Everything else is absolutely correct, because he is describing the European revivals of the ancient Roman Empire. Byzantium, of course, that goes back to Justinian. Of course, he misses the first three, pagan groups. But then Charlemagne, Otto the Great, Napoleon, and Hitler. Absolutely correct. He goes on to say, today is no different. The separate national existence and the idea of the empire are present at the same times. In other words, in the book of Daniel, we read that those 10 nations or groups of nations come together, but they're really not together because they have their own idea. So they have still their national identity, but they're coming together. And that's exactly what Orban is talking about. National culture and European values. Sovereignty and, as they put it in Brussels, the ever closer union. The latter term is in the preamble to the EU Basic Treaty of Lisbon, which applies to all member states. So in other words, ever closer union is a goal. Now, of course, you can imagine how he was attacked for these comments. And that should tell us something, because we make similar comments, right? So if he is attacked, and of course people focus on us, we are going to be attacked too, that's for sure. But the Hungarian opposition leader, I don't even try to pronounce that name here, he said, this person is sick. To mention Hitler together with the European idea is sick. It's a disgusting thought. Is it? Is it really? We see right now that 10 European nations, I mean, we don't quite see that yet. We see that Europe is coming together. We know from the Bible that it's going to be 10 European nations, core nations, who then ultimately will lead Europe and then pass on their power, their authority, to a very charismatic political, military, economic leader called the Beast, who I believe is alive, but he hasn't manifested himself on the world scene yet. We know he's of German, Austrian descent, and he will work hand in hand with another powerful religious figure, the false prophet. Now, some don't quite get that right. They still keep talking about that it's going to be the Beast who is going to be sitting in the temple of God. Now, that's false. It's always been false. It is a false prophet. See, the false prophet is going to sit in the temple of God, proclaiming to be God. He is the one who is coming with the power of Satan. He is the one who has the power from Satan to do miracles, as the book of Revelation also tells you about. So, but that's going to come. So the temple will have to be built. It's going to be built prior to Christ's return, because that's clearly prophesied. Now, Europe's plan to become a very powerful army, a military might and power, it's something we also talk about in the Standing Watch program, the latest one. But I felt that this article by the Future of Freedom Foundation, which was published on May 12th, is quite interesting. Now, the author is a lawyer who has been practicing law for many, many years. Apparently, he's not practicing now anymore because he is now the chairman of that foundation. This is what he wrote. One of the interesting aspects of the Russia-Ukraine war is that the regimes in both countries have resorted to conscription to get soldiers to serve their country. With conscription, the state commands a citizen to report to a military facility where he is forced to become an employee of the state at a wage set by the state. Even worse, he is forced to kill people. And then he's talking about the following. One might be tempted to conclude that the United States is different from Russia and Ukraine. Not so. Just like those two countries, the US government also relies on conscription. And then they talk about the fact that right now we don't have a draft, but everybody who's turning 18 has a duty to register in case there is going to be the reinforcement and reinstatement of the draft. And the author points out, if anyone fails to do so, in other words, to register, he will be arrested, prosecuted, convicted, and incarcerated. That is why they did, or what they did, to draft resistors during the Vietnam War. Muhammad Ali was a good example of how they target people who refuse to comply with a system of involuntary servitude. Make no mistake about it, he says. If the Pentagon and the CIA succeed in embroiling the United States in a war with Russia or China or both, US officials will not hesitate to do what Russia and Ukraine are doing. They will immediately resort to conscripting both American men and women to serve their country. I think that's a real possibility. It may not be a quote-unquote war with Russia or China even, but there is going to be a war coming between the United States and Europe. And so I would say conscription, the draft, both in America and in Europe, is going to happen. And that's why we have been warning and telling our young people to be prepared for that. Now, as I said it again, or I said it, I want to say it again, write down your thoughts. You know, get it signed, get it testified by somebody who co-signs, pointing out why you are opposed to serving in the military, going to war, carrying a weapon to kill people with. Do it now, because once conscription starts, it's going to be pretty late to do it. And then there's one more article I want to point out today that was published by Modern Diplomacy on May 13. Actually today. Now, you might have heard some of the things which I'm going to read to you now, but maybe not all of it. And I felt the article was very good in putting it all together. That's what it says. Macron's visit to Beijing stirred up controversy, causing divisions within the European Union and between EU countries and the United States. His comments on the need for Europe to achieve strategic independence from America were met with surprise and criticism from some EU countries and the United States, who accused him of promoting goalism and ingratitude towards America's contributions to the West, including France. Macron believes that the real battle for Europe lies in establishing itself as a powerful political, economic, and military bloc alongside the major global players such as the United States, Russia, and China. He views the conflict in Ukraine as a systematic assault on Europe, which underscores the need for Europe to act on its own interests other than those to others and of others. During his visit to China, Macron reaffirmed France's support for the One China policy, recognizing Beijing as a sole legitimate representative of China and Taiwan, as an inalienable part of China. He urged Europeans to adopt an independent stance on the Taiwan issue, calling for peaceful resolution based on Beijing's proposal of one country, two systems. President Macron appears to have had enough of the international protests and internal protests in France, which have been fueled by the country's poor economic conditions, high prices, energy losses, and other issues. Now here, listen to this. He believes that the United States bears a significant responsibility for these problems, particularly after canceling the French-Australian submarine deal worth an estimated 35 billion euros. The US persuaded Australia to build nuclear-powered submarines under a new deal with the United States and Britain, known as AUKUS, causing France to suffer significant financial losses. During the war in Ukraine, the US requested that European countries participate in the economic blockade on Moscow and not buy gas from Russia in exchange for America's pledge to supply European countries with gas. However, the price for American gas was significantly higher than that of Russian gas, leading to additional burdens on the French citizens. And then it's talking about that Macron has been saying NATO is kind of dead and we don't need NATO and so on. And it also says that French support for Ukraine in its war against Moscow was limited compared to that of other European countries. And so that's why some of the European countries don't like Macron having a closer relationship with China. And the same is true for the United States. Now, here's, this is another interesting comment in this rather lengthy article. The United States believes that any international system will have only one seat for the European continent, which will most likely go to Germany. Germany seeks to rebuild its military force, allocating an additional budget of 100 billion euros to make its army the largest and strongest in Europe. Additionally, the German economy is the largest on the European continent, contributing 27% of all European industries, followed by Italy with 16% and France with only 11%. It appears, and this is now the interesting thing, we're talking about it on our way up there with Mrs. Adair and my wife. You know, we kind of expected these kind of things happening under Mr. Trump's continued presidency. But now this is under the presidency of Mr. Biden, right? Not too many expected this, what is being said right now. It appears that French-American relations will not easily return to the previous state. France has taken practical steps towards distancing itself from its alliance with the U.S. in favor of its own interests, particularly in cooperation with Beijing. Macron's statement on the importance of reducing dependence on the U.S. dollar was seen as a step by Washington, leading to great indignation in Eastern and Central Europe and parts of Western Europe, where countries felt that his statements were focused on France, not the EU. But Hungary's prime minister, the one we just quoted, was seemingly the only leader to support Macron. And he also supported Russia in its war against Ukraine, questioning the usefulness of Western sanctions imposed on Moscow. So here you have it. It's by far not clear that Europe and America will be walking and working hand in hand when it comes to the situation with Ukraine, with Russia. And we also see very clearly, because France is an important partner in this deal, that the distancing between Europe and the United States is getting bigger, something which we have been telling you all along. Ukraine and Russia will somehow unite. I mean, I don't care what's happening right now. Zelensky was in Italy. He's going to be in Germany tomorrow or on Sunday. You know, they can talk as much as they want. Biblically and prophetically speaking, Russia and Ukraine will unite, and they will unite against Europe, ultimately. I said that in the Standing Watch program, that in World War II, originally, Ukraine was a friend of Nazi Germany. I don't know how many people know that. They were supporting Nazi Germany. But then Hitler, due to his insane policy, was not favorable towards Ukraine. So Ukraine switched sides. And then they became supporters of Russia. Last night, I read an article in a German magazine exactly echoing that same development. I mean, that's a fact. I mean, we cannot dispute it. And so, according to what we understand from the Bible, something like that is going to happen again. And so, we are seeing more and more a situation where America is going downhill. I mean, I don't need to really tell you that. I mean, you know that. I mean, you've got to be blind not to see it. America is going downhill in every respect. And the distancing between America and Europe is growing. And Europe is coming together. And they want to build a very powerful European army, as we've just heard. And when that happens, they will give their power, their authority to 10 nations, and they in turn to the beast. So that's something to wait for. But it doesn't appear that we are dealing with, and I don't want to give a figure here now, but many, 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 many years. It doesn't appear that way. Of course, we don't know. And so our young people, you live as if you have a whole lifetime in front of you. You know, go to university if that's what you want to do. Go to Get a job if that's what you want to do. Don't think, oh, well, tomorrow everything is over, so therefore I don't have to do anything. That would be totally wrong. But at the same time, be prepared, because it could be.